John Sewell tells the story of when he was a young monk and first went to stay with John Mun. One day, John Mun asked him how his meditation was going. And John Sewell says, "My mind is all over the place. It's distracted." And then John Mun comforted him. He said, "Well, the fact that you know that it's distracted, that's part of mindfulness practice. It counts as mindfulness." And John Sewell took it well. And since it realized, okay, John Mun was trying to comfort him, but not saying that what he was doing was good. It's a beginning step, recognizing that your mind is distracted, but you've got to do something about it. This is very different from the way mindfulness is usually taught nowadays, where it's all about being non-reactive, just being with whatever comes up. But that's not how the Buddha taught mindfulness. There is some virtue in being with whatever comes up, because a lot of times we try to deny things. Years back when they had that Ajahn Chah celebration up in Portola Valley, a lot of people were talking about what they liked about Ajahn Chah, what attracted them to Ajahn Chah. And it seems like in every case, they were having trouble just adjusting to the fact that they were in Thailand, accepting things the way they are. So a lot of his teaching had to do with equanimity and patience. He probably saw that Westerners lacked these qualities and they needed them to be reinforced before they could really get started on anything further in the practice. So our society is in sore need of equity and patience, which is what a lot of what gets sold as mindfulness nowadays actually is. Being equanimous about what comes up, being patient with what comes up. But that's not the end of the story. There was an incident way back in Burma. I've forgotten which of the Burmese meditation traditions they tell it in, but one of the founders of the tradition went to see an old monk up in the hills and asked him about where to look for good guidance in meditation. And the old monk told him, "Everything you need to know is in the Satipatthana Sutta, or the Mahasatipatthana Sutta," which is a big piece of misinformation. Unfortunately, the founder of the tradition went back and took that as his guide. But the Mahasatipatthana Sutta tells only a part of mindfulness practice. The full formula is keeping, say, the body in and of itself in mind, or keeping track of the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. And then the whole rest of the sutta talks about what it means to keep something, or to keep track of something. Keep track of the body in and of itself, or feelings, or mind, or mental qualities in and of themselves. And so the sutta is basically mindfulness 1.0. Tells you one part of the formula, what it means to keep track of something. But then the rest, being ardent, alert, and mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world, that gets left for other parts of the canon. But that's what the practice is all about. Ardent, alert, mindful, putting aside greed and distress with reference to the world. This is how you get the mind in the concentration. Alert means that you watch what's happening. Mindful means that you keep in mind what you've got to do. And ardency is the desire to do it well. And John Lee, when he explains mindfulness practice, points to the wisdom and ardency. You don't just know about things, you know that something has to be done with them. And this is hinted even in the sutta, when it talks about dealing with the hindrances, dealing with the factors for awakening, dealing with the fetters that arise at the six senses. You don't just watch them coming and going. Say a hindrance or a fetter arises, you watch how it comes, you watch how it goes, and then you watch how it can be made to go away and not come back. And with the factors for awakening, you watch it come, you watch it go, and then you watch how it can be maintained and developed further. So even in the sutta, it's not just sitting there watching things. There's a direction to where you want to go. There's a direction for your ardency. So mindfulness 2.0 takes you through the ardency into concentration. As the Buddha said, one of the functions of mindfulness is to keep unskillful qualities out of the mind and bring skillful qualities in, like a gatekeeper at a fortress. You've got to watch out for the spies and other people who might create trouble in your fortress. You don't let them in, but you let in the people who are friends or soldiers and other people who are on your side. And so as you're sitting here meditating, you do have to admit what's coming up, but you don't just stop with the admitting. You realize that something has to be done. And what you keep in mind are the duties of the Four Noble Truths. Some things have to be comprehended. Stress has to be comprehended. Its cause has to be abandoned. Its cessation has to be realized, and the path to the cessation has to be developed. In many cases, the Buddha emphasizes two of those duties more than the others, the abandoning and the developing. And so here we're trying to develop concentration. It means that anything that comes up that's not related to the breath, you put it aside, put it aside. Anything that is related to the breath that helps you, you try to develop it, you try to strengthen it. That's what it means to be ardent. And that's why it's wise, because without the ardency, things come and things go, and you're just sitting there on the side of the road watching them come and go. But here, this is your mind. It's not just cars on a road. And what shape is your mind in? You want your mind to be in good shape. You want to be able to say no to the things in the mind that are going to harm it, and say yes to the things that will help it to develop. So anything related to the breath, anything that helps you settle down with the breath, yes. And once you're here, what do you do with the breath? Well, ardency means being especially sensitive to the breath. And what kind of breathing would feel really good right now? Because the purpose of right mindfulness is to lead into right concentration. So if you can get absorbed in the breath, gain an interest in the breath, that helps you stay. The Buddha lists four qualities that help with success in doing this. The first is simply the desire. You want to do this well. That's the ardency. But ardency also contains persistence and a quality called intent. This is where right effort and the four bases of success overlap. You learn how to generate the desire to do this well, and then you stick with it. You keep at it. The mind wanders off, you bring it back. It wanders off again, you bring it back again. 3 times, 5 times, 10 times, 100 times, keep bringing it back. Show it that you mean business. When it comes back, pay careful attention to two things. One, what would be a really comfortable breath to stay with? So the mind will want to stay here. And secondly, watch out for the fact that it's going to wander off again. You want it to be able to catch it. The more quickly you can catch it, the more you see in the end of the mind. The various stages and how it slips off. And somehow it seems to deny to itself that this is happening. But when you can see through that, then you're in a much better position to stop it from happening. And finally, there's vimangsa, which is another aspect of discernment, which is you try to use your ingenuity and figure out ways that will help the mind to stay. This is what gets you absorbed, because you're experimenting and you're learning. It's not just tying the mind down to a stake, but you're gaining some training in what is it like to be with the body, what's actually going on in the body. What are the layers of breath energy in the body? We talk about the in and out breath and the breath that gets suffused to the nerves and the blood vessels. Well, there's another level that's even deeper still, that's very quiet. It's a kind of energy, but it's an energy that just stays in place. And the mind can access it only when the mind is very quiet, too. Different people will find that they have nodes of this energy in different places. It could be in the middle of the chest, it can be down by the breastbone, right between the eyes. There are lots of different places where you, if you're really, really quiet, you can get the sense of it's very still right there. And there's no need for an in and out breath right there. If you can access that, try to stay with it. It's a good resting place for the mind. But know that it's good to be with all the different levels of the breath. Because sometimes the problem is not there. That's with the breath energy spreading through the body, might not be spreading well. What can you do to get it to go to places where it ordinarily doesn't go? Try breathing in different directions. In from the left, in from the right, in from the front, in from the back, down, up. See what helps for that particular spot. Or sometimes the problem is simply the fact that the breath is too shallow or too deep. Watch out for the breath when it gets really shallow and very light. If your range or awareness isn't broad, you'll tend to drift off. Sometimes after a day of work, you need some heavier breathing. Learn to realize that these three different types of breath energy, the in and out breath and the suffused breath and the still breath, have their uses. And as you're maintaining your mind here in the present moment, this is a good thing to study. Apply your ingenuity to figure out what's going on. It makes the concentration more interesting. At the same time, gets the mind more and more under your control. As the Buddha said, one of the purposes of meditation is to think thoughts that you want to think and not things thoughts you don't want to think. And that too is one of the purposes of mindfulness. He calls mindfulness a governing principle. In other words, it watches over what is unskillful and figure out how to put an end to it, and what's skillful, how to develop it. And the Buddha talks about how mindfulness and effort and right view all circle around all the different factors of the path. This is the role of mindfulness, to remember. You know, if you encounter something that's wrong, you have to abandon it. If you encounter something that's skillful, you want to develop it. That's mindfulness 2.0. After watching things arise and pass away on their own, it makes good things arise and makes unskillful things pass away. And that way it gives a lot more benefits. It gives you tools to deal with things so that you can actually complete the duties of the Four Noble Truths and realize what is the cessation of suffering. That's a large goal, but it's within our reach. It's something we can all do. As the Buddha said, if it were impossible to abandon unskillful qualities and to develop skillful qualities, he wouldn't have taught it. Or if the process of abandoning unskillful qualities and developing skillful qualities led to pain and suffering, he wouldn't have taught that either. But it's because we are able to abandon these unskillful things and develop the skillful ones, and that it's a good thing to do. It leads to true happiness. That's why the Buddha taught, and that's why we're practicing.